Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I like sucking.
Legit bad podcast.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Hey, welcome back to Legit Bad. Today we have on Chaz, he's the author of Paranormal Expeditions, Hunt for the Friendship. It's a story of Nazis, UFOs, psychedelics, and an expedition to the edge of the world. He kind of details his little trip he took down to Chile to investigate an island that had some crazy shit going on down there. And he'll talk about it some more. You can find him on Instagram at Chaz of the Dead. You can follow us at Legit Bat Podcast on Instagram. And if you want to send us a beer, Cash App me. It's Joe Hodgson on Cash App. Enjoy the chat, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me on. We're here to talk about my new book, Paranormal Expeditions, Hunt for the Friendship. It's great to finally be on the show. I've chatted with you guys a few times before.
Happy to have you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Good to have the official one in.
Oh, are we cheersing?
Yeah.
Hang on, I gotta open a new one. Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers the mic.
I got you.
You and your coffee at fucking, what is it, 8 o'clock at night?
I don't know, dude. I drink a 16-ounce Red Bull at like 6. I'm good.
And then he complains about insomnia.
Actually, that's funny too, because that's like the first energy drink I've had all week, and I thought, you know what, instead of taking a nap halfway through the day because I got 4 hours of sleep, let's power through. Let's really try to see if I can sleep tonight. I doubt it'll work though.
I don't think so.
So Chaz, how many pages is your book? How long did it take you to go from starting process to finishing process until you finally got a copy in your hands?
So the book is, I'm looking at it right now, it's about 254 pages. It took me about 2 years to get it all put together, and that's from starting research, and that includes going to Chile to investigate in person, and the field research involved there, and of course editing and all that as well. Quite a long process, but it's my baby. It was worth it. And it's been getting some surprisingly good reviews. It's been making a little bit of a scene. Have you guys read it yet?
No,
I have not. No,
I plan on it though, especially after MU gave it that huge review. You could tell Ben liked it a lot. Not Ben Grundy If you haven't listened to Mysterious Universe, fucking listen to it.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I thought it was great that they mentioned that, too, that you actually got off your ass and did your own research. You didn't just sit back and Google shit all day. You actually physically traveled down there to look at it.
Yeah, that's part that's been getting a lot of good reviews. I was kind of surprised about that. You know, writing the paranormal stuff and the research is a little different than writing kind of the travel portion of it. But to hear people find it really interesting and appreciate that kind of research.
Well, how much did that put you out?
Made it all worth it.
That had to been couldn't have been a cheap trip, right?
Oh no! I spent all the savings I had, which it wasn't much, but I spent it all doing that, and I did some volunteer projects along the way to help with the budgeting. But yeah, it was definitely quite the journey.
I would love that just to do it, but you actually went there with a mission, and I saw some crazy shit along the way. I wanted to start out with your crazy UFO sighting, and I know people, MU included, are talking, not really talking shit, but kind of, you know, downgrading experiences like that when you're on mushrooms or acid. I don't know why you should do it. I think that's what makes that shit happen. I don't know if it's an attractant or if it's just something that happens that you can see because you're, you know, in that altered state. But I thought that part was great when he said, what do you do, just do a bunch of shrooms and acid and see UFOs? I'm like, yeah, that's what you do. So start off with that one. That was before you went down to Chile, though, right?
Yes, that was when I first kind of started to develop this this kind of appreciation for the phenomenon in a similar sense, that it's something maybe not quite entirely physical, something to do with our consciousness, and experimenting with those elements with hallucinogenic drugs might allow you to facilitate these kinds of sightings. So my initial experiments were on, I was doing mushroom teas, and I was using a Ouija board, actually. And, you know, as a paranormal investigator, I started out, you know, pretty traditionally with, you know, Ouija boards and ghost hunts and EVPs and those kinds of things. I've since moved away from that kind of field, but it's, you know, everyone's kind of first.
All right, you're going to have to explain, because I am very much on the other side of the subject. What is an EVP?
Oh, electronic voice phenomenon. It's nonsense. If you've ever watched a Ghost Adventures episode, it's what those guys do, right? They sit in an empty museum and shout into the darkness, and then they listen to audio feedback and call it ghosts.
Because what I was going to say is a lot of the things that you're probably going to bring up, don't try to retain your thought process, because I might have to interject and ask what a few of these things are. To me, it sounds about as bad as when my wife comes home with a bunch of military acronyms. I'm like, you're going to have to explain all of that because I know nothing about these subjects.
Explain your nerd shit.
No worries. It's good to get the explanations here. This is going to be a very educational episode. yes, I was doing mushroom teas and a Ouija board experiments. And that's kind of was my first kind of probe into the idea that this phenomenon might be more, you know, just playing with the idea that it might be more psychological or along those lines. And while I was doing them, there's nothing really happened, right? Standard Ouija board stuff, nothing really happened. I might have made myself move the planchette a couple times, got a couple letters, but I don't think anything significant came through. I took EVPs of those sessions too and listened to that. Again, nothing. But I noticed a couple of very strange things in between my experiments. I had done these experiments on the weekend around my day job at the time. And during the week, afterwards in the evening, a few days after one of these experiments, I'm sitting on the back porch with a friend of mine. We're smoking a joint, so a mild hallucinogen there, but we're not under any of effects of these mushroom teas. It's been days since I've taken any. And a large triangle craft floated, just hovered right over the house. It made a kind of a mechanical hum, but not too loud. It was very big, though, and it was very low down. I could have hit it with a rock. It was that close.
Would you say it was something as close in size to, like, the Phoenix Light or smaller?
So it wasn't quite as large as that. I would say it was about the size of, you know, a one-story kind of house. You know, it covered our house. If anyone's familiar with the Gulf Breeze sightings here in Florida, it seems to be that same kind of typical triangle-shaped craft that a lot of people seem to be seeing in this area. It's, you know, just the big triangle with the three lights. A lot of people hypothesize that it's, you know, military tech. There is a military base kind of up by the panhandle there, a little bit there. People say experimental aircraft. I'm not so sure, though. I do think this sighting had a little bit to do with my experiments. The second occurrence was right after I had taken some mushroom tea. I don't know if you guys are mushroom fans. It takes a little while for it to kick in, right? You got, you know, about, depending on how much you ate that day, about an hour or so before for the rocket takes off.
You so get the I yawn. The
Exactly. So I had just sipped my tea and I think I was smoking a joint again and looking up at the sky. When I saw I was actually watching planes kind of leave, you know, their chemtrails across the sky. And I saw one bright light come into view and was watching it. And it suddenly burst. It almost kind of looked like an explosion. But into these several little pieces that scattered off in different directions. And I initially thought maybe it was like a satellite re-entering or something. It just looked like, you know, that kind of explosion, but the direction of the little objects and all that, it was very strange. And of course I couldn't find any news articles about any other reentries or just anyone seeing it other than me. So it was a very bizarre situation. And that was only 26 minutes after I had ingested the mushrooms. So not, you know, I had still taken them. So many skeptics will say that was that.
I can say as an expert that that's bullshit because it takes at least an hour for those things to kick in. You'll get bored in an hour going, come on, something. You don't just see a fucking UFO over your head. I was going to ask you, though, what do you think about military versus alien? I think we talked about that on a previous episode, but what do you think about the ratio of military to alien? Because I think a lot of it is military, but then it doesn't make any sense for me to fly something like that over your house if it's military. Like, what... Are they stupid? If it's an experimental aircraft, they're not doing that.
Well, so when it comes to UFOs in particularly, I hypothesize that there are physical crafts at the root of it, but that these crafts, possibly because of their propulsion system, if it is this anti-gravity zero-point energy that some researchers have said, if that's the case, then I think that these crafts cause psychedelic experiences to occur. If they exist in their own independent time and space, the only way we would perceive that as human beings with our limited sensory abilities would be in a similar way as to a drug trip. And that's why you have these situations where people see strange worlds and encounter these variety of entities is because they're tripping balls. But obviously something physical is happening at the same time. They're coming back with implants. They're coming back with scars. You know, there's cattle mutilations associated with these crafts and these kinds of things. So I think the physical aspects... there's somewhere where the line is, where it blends with these physical aspects and non-physical aspects. And that's kind of the area I try to keep my research at.
So you...
And I guess to answer the question posited, I don't know. I don't know if the U.S. or any of military has an understanding of one of these craft. Maybe they've acquired one. I think Bob Lazar said they dug one out of an archaeological site. But he also said that our scientists were hopeless in understanding it. And I kind of think that's where we're at. I kind of hold the same belief when it comes to like AI research and things as well. I think we have a fundamental misunderstanding of how our consciousness works. And it's the idea that you can keep crossing wires and eventually get a conscious thinking being is, I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding there. And I think exploring these parapsychological situations, what you know, science would call these, I think there's something to that, because if you sit there and look at the phenomenon, there's something happening, and it's having physical effects on reality, whether it's just individuals' realities or reality as a whole. Of course, the latter, that's where it gets interesting, right? Group sightings and things like that, where it gets super interesting.
Well, I like what you said about fundamentally misunderstanding what is consciousness, because we actually, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, we did a consciousness episode, and that was basically where we ended up. Was we were just talking, let's just take it away of what is consciousness. Let's try to just define that. Is it something that is strictly physical, created by a physical mind? And then we went, we talked about transhumanism, and then we talked about going into AI and stuff like that. And it's like, I don't think that consciousness can be created in the way that we're talking about the kind of consciousness that human beings have, or in this sense, any kind of paranormal, extraterrestrial kind of being, because I don't think that you could create, for instance, another Joe. You couldn't create another Jen or myself or you, because it would not be you anymore. So like, yeah, you can cross wires and you can create something that is as close to consciousness as it is. But I mean, you're coming into the same age-old problem as the Terminator movies and all of everything else when they start to quote-unquote evolve. It's like, okay, but there isn't an actual consciousness there, because there are things like thoughts and patterns that pop into your head, as far as you're considered, unannounced, but that you also think about the fact that they came in unannounced. That, to me, is like what consciousness is. It's the ability to have things happen to you that you don't know are happening, or you didn't think that would happen, and then also be able to question it as to why exactly that came in unannounced, the thought, a pattern, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I agree, I like what you said though about misunderstanding the consciousness, because I don't think that that's in any way, shape, or form where they're going to be able to go with it. I don't think that you can create a human or other consciousness like that by crossing wires and trying to understand it. I don't think that that's in any way, shape, or form how that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, right. I think it's the same as taking a picture of someone. Like, it looks like the person, but it's not them. I don't think they can ever create enough AI algorithms to duplicate a person. That's why I don't think that the transhumanism thing will work in the end. If you upload your consciousness to a computer, I don't think it's going to be you. It might be a exact carbon copy of you, but the original you is not going to be in there, you know? But anyway, we got rabbit trailed on fucking consciousness again. So didn't you have a second sighting, a second UFO sighting, or was that the one, the big one, the big triangle?
The big triangle was the preliminary, the real kind of sighting that made me think, there's something to these experiments. And it was actually reinforced by a report I came across by a researcher. I believe his name was Jefferson Weekly, and this was from the 90s. And he had an abduction experience one night, kind of the typical abduction experience. His was almost borderlining closer to sleep paralysis. because it occurred in his bed and the little grays were around his bed. It didn't occur in a ship. But the part of the story that stuck out to me is that he felt that this happened because he took mushrooms a few weeks before. And that was a similar situation to where I was in, where I had taken it, it was a few days before, but it was mostly out of my system at that point. So that kind of has put me on the thinking that maybe the microdosing is the best way to actually get these kinds of experiences happening.
Well, then where the fuck are all our alien experiences?
I know.
We microdose all the time.
Allegedly, hypothetically.
I haven't seen one UFO, ever.
Well, keep your eyes to the sky more, and maybe.
Oh, we do.
Or maybe it is something about doing the macro dose and then weaning off of it after some time. Mm-hmm. I also tried some LSD experiments, which are also detailed in my book. I went to some hot spots in South America, some UFO hot spots, and tried some similar experiments, this time with LSD. Some mixed results. I didn't really see anything. There was one photo with an orb in it, but I don't really like orbs. I think there's a lot of things that could explain that. It's a weird one. But there's no way, of course, it could be a light reflecting off of something, reflecting off, it's impossible to truly say. Yeah. The one strange thing that happened, though, we hitchhiked up to this lake. It was a dry lake bed called Lake Colburn, tucked into the Andes. And we did an LSD experiment. And my assistant, my girlfriend at the time, she took a little bit LSD too. And while we were separated on the lake, just trying to observe anything strange, I quietly asked myself, why would an alien visit this place? What's attracting aliens to this site? What makes it a hot spot? She, about 100 yards away, didn't hear me, was completely off on her own thing. But when I asked that question, she started hearing auditory hallucinations. She started hearing a language she couldn't understand, she had never heard before. And that would only stop once we left the outer banks of the lake there. And then we did have to hitchhike back down the mountain while tripping on LSD. And that was probably one of the times I've been most wigged out.
You don't say.
Yeah, it seems like the start of a bad horror movie.
Dude, sitting in your own house in the safety of your own walls on LSD will make you bug out as it is. So I can't even fucking imagine being in a different country hitchhiking down a mountain. Jesus Christ, dude, you're a champion.
In a paranormal hotspot.
Yeah, expecting to see aliens. Jesus.
It's funny, too, because you walked into it. Like, I would completely sober be a little bit bugged out walking in there just because of where it's at, what it's known for. But you walk into it knowingly and then start that kind of trip. Oh, my God.
I'd be paranoid enough smoking a joint.
On my own.
yeah, that is definitely, it's definitely something I'm cautious about.
Sounds like it.
I try to be as cautious as I can. I'm pretty experienced when it comes to my psychedelics, so my dosing's pretty good. I know where to keep myself at to be able to function.
I know that you said earlier that you were doing some of the tea varieties. Have you had or partaken in ayahuasca?
No, not yet. I actually, I very much want to. I had a plan to go down there. It kind of got blown up with the whole coronavirus, no more traveling thing. But I planned to go down to South America and go in the jungle. I'm going to go and do it with a shaman. God.
Dude, I looked into it.
You have
and
to do it like that, though. That's like the only way to do it. That's the right way.
That's the only way I would do it.
I will be mad at you if you do it another way and you do not want ayahuasca to be mad at you while you're on ayahuasca.
Dude, I looked into trips down there and it's Not cheap, first of all. Just the resort itself is not cheap, and then there's airfare, but this was also a year or two ago before the whole COVID shit, so maybe they're trying to get more people down there.
What about peyote?
So I've done some mescaline analogs. I've done, you know, the chemical form of peyote. You know, I lived in Mexico for a couple years, and I couldn't. I tried. I went to some markets that I had no business being at, and I couldn't really get myself some peyote. Everything else seemed to be on available, but I think there was a little more respect for the peyote, and they wouldn't give it to me
some as white
a
boy.
Foreigner like that. Yeah,
you don't deserve that.
But I got some connections. I think I might be able to swing it next time. The hard thing about doing my type of experiments in Mexico is just anywhere in the field like that, it has an extra, it's a little more dangerous
than
a lot of the places. So while it's fun, it's hard to conduct my research at the spots in Mexico. But there's still some nice spots, and the pyramids and things are all right. You can go there for a day trip.
Oh yeah.
Now, when it comes to your book, I know you said it was about 250 pages. After writing it, how was any or all of it? I know obviously there's alterations in the editing process and whatnot. Was there any parts that were just completely omitted that you kind of went, I wish that was in there? I wouldn't think that you would let something like that stay out of your book, but I also know that some things happen in editing where it's like, this isn't necessary. Was there anything that was condensed or omitted out of it that you kind of wish was in there?
So I actually cut out some of the jokes.
Why?
I had some jokes in there, and I wanted to make sure I was taking, you know, at least a little more
halfway serious.
Yeah. So I cut some of those out, and actually if there's only any regret is I should have maybe cut out a little bit more.
Once you start cutting everything out, so you're like, shit, this is dwindling.
Yeah. Well, the religion, there's a section on the religious connections to this case, and I'm a little harsh on those connections. I don't really think much of those researchers, and it kind of shows in that section. And that's all good and well, but I just found out my aunt bought a copy, and she's a little religious.
Oh.
So it might make the next family gathering a little tense.
You know, what you should do is show up to the next family gathering with a signed book for her.
I'll sign the copy she got. But just to get into the book a little bit more for the listeners, the case Hunt for the Friendship is my subtitle there, and the Friendship are a group a group who claim to be extraterrestrials, based out of Patagonia somewhere in southern Chile, and this group, they're tall and blonde. And they seem to generate this kind of aura that makes people really compliant. Things you typically hear in alien cases, and more specifically in the contactee cases, kind of the cases in the 50s and the 60s that really started the modern UFO pop culture. Interestingly enough, this case took place mostly in the 80s, some years after those cases were kind of popular in the U.S.
Really quick, Chaz, for premise, context, and setting, what year was it that you actually made this trip down to Chile?
So that would be 2019.
Just last year.
I was down there doing the field research. I was there for almost 3 months, just a little bit under. That's the visa they allow you.
Were you all in the same area and kind of playing it by ear, or did you have a pretty strict itinerary for this?
So I did, like I said, I did some volunteer projects. So I kind of hopped around. Of course, Chile's a very long country. I kind of went to Santiago and then traveled south doing UFO hotspots and some other historical sites relevant to the book's research. One of the most interesting sites I went to, and it would be an interesting paranormal site to investigate, but I was actually investigating it for a different reason, and that was Villa Bavaria. So this was a place it's in southern Chile. It was formerly called Colonia Dignidad, Dignity Colony, and it was set up by a German pastor. And it was this remote cult, Jim Jones style religious doomsday cult.
That would be an interesting place to go.
It was very interesting. The guy who ran it, Paul Schaefer, he's in prison now, but he was a child molester, and he would, you know, they had their own school and all that kind of stuff. But they would also cycle in and out escaped Nazis. They had a hospital on the premise, and Mengele was working there for a few years when he escaped. They had all kinds of, former SS officers and these kinds of people. So I went there just looking into this idea that maybe these tall blonde people who claim they're aliens might actually have a different heritage, a different origin. The idea that maybe it's not an alien hospital, it's actually a Nazi submarine base buried somewhere in the archipelago with the permission of the Chilean government. And that's what made that investigation kind of strange.
Not permission.
Well, they found weapons caches buried on the property in Colonia Dignidad just a few years ago. Old, like, grenades and stuff buried and saved. There's been some suggestion that was done with some knowledge of the military. When I was there, there were wedding albums, and surprisingly enough, people go to this doomsday cult compound to get married. But it was mostly military officers, you know, people in their military uniforms getting married. So it seems that there's still a connection with that group and some of the darker elements in the Chilean government there. So that was one place where I didn't tell them what I was doing. I didn't say, hey, I'm here to write a book about UFOs. It was kind of one of those things where I had to lay low and keep quiet, do some snooping around at night. And it was definitely bizarre. Another bizarre place to be on the ground investigating.
Did you get the feeling in any of the sites that you went to being, I don't want to say a tourist attraction, but a known hotspot for that, where I'm sure that they get their fill of people coming to look at it, this, that, and the other. Did you get a feeling in any of the spots that you went to that some of it was, shall we say, more promoted than just it being a place that is a native spot? Like, instead of it being like, you know, you hear from a native, like, actually, not a lot of people know about this, but there's a spot over there that's known for it. Mm-hmm. If you would like to go do some research there, it would be a spot that not a lot of people know about. Was there anything like that, or was it more, I guess you could say, promoted hotspot?
So there is this portion just south of Santiago in Chile. They call it the UFO Trail. And it's kind of it's not really a trail. It's a bunch of sites along a few different towns. You can't walk it. You have to take, the bus to each different location. And some of the spots come off a little bit as, the tired roadside attraction, a little bit.
They have a gift shop
but
and
when
shit.
When you talk to people in these, especially when you're in the Andes, and around the mountains there, people have stories, and they tell them in a way where they're not, they're not doing it for sales. And we were in the off season. We went to one location, Vilches Alto, which is tucked high in the mountains. I mean, it was snowing. We were trudging through snow, and we were trying to visit this site. There's some flattened stone shapes. There's an Ancient Aliens episode about this spot. They said it was a UFO landing site. But we went out there, and it was too much snow. There was no one there. We actually walked to a couple different inns and hotels and knocked, and they were closed because it was off season. And we were lucky to get accommodations, but the lady who did accommodate us was like, "Oh yeah, no, I see them, you know, frequently. My husband's got some stories of leading people there, and they told us a story where her husband, who does guided tours through the park, he took these two guys out there who wanted to camp. And at first he said, "No, I'm not camping out there. There's just too much weird shit." But they offered to pay him, you know, a double or triple rate. And, you know, he's going to take that. So they went out and they got to this. They finally got to these flattened stone works where they say it's a UFO landing spot. And they take off all their gear and they're walking around. And they enter one of these stone patterns that's, you know, carved into the side of this mountain. And one of the travelers gets frozen and he can't move. And he has like this 15 seconds of pure paralysis. He actually went to light his cigarette and he was stuck in motion and couldn't light it. And he got the other two guys to come and check it out and stand in that spot. And the exact same thing happened to them. For whatever reason, they were under this kind of paralysis. And that was enough for them. They thought that was too weird. They packed their shit up and they left and they went to camp that night. And, you know, talking to the locals on the ground, you just hear stories like this so often they're told in a manner of, you know, like two friends at a bar. And of course, maybe there's some exaggeration here and there, but it definitely, you know, they weren't selling us any tickets to the park. It was snowed. It was closed.
I feel like you can tell when someone's being genuine, you know, when they're not. Yeah. Trying to, sell you on an idea.
Especially old Mexican ladies, you kind of have to believe them. They're pretty, they insist upon themselves.
Yeah,
you can't just not believe them.
They're not in a big city. They're just in their little, you know, world. If they're...
No, I saw this, mijo. I saw this.
Those are the kind of people who are like, that shit's not fucking real. Get real. We do real work every day, real stuff all the time. So if they see something that's out of this world, they're like, holy shit, I can't believe it.
Right.
Why are you so interested in that case in the first place?
For me, it reached out to me as a case that really kind of had it all. It kind of had all the different aspects that one can investigate the phenomenon from. Of course, you have your traditional UFO kind of angle, whether you take it from the psychedelic or the physical craft kind of explanation. Either of those could play into an explanation for the friendship case. Then, of course, there's the human explanation that it's Nazis. And then to divide that one into, you have Nazis who may have UFO technology, or just your typical Nazis hiding in a submarine base. What really struck me when I started doing the research was the mythological connections, that there's some, you know, deep-seated mythology there. Of course, a lot of native tribes from Patagonia have their own beliefs and systems. But one particular legend from the 1800s about a ghost ship, El Caluche, it had some huge striking similarities to the friendship case in a weird kind of way. So the legend of that ghost ship is that it's this ship people see that's it's always kind of more of like an advanced ship. It's usually a sailing ship, but it's you know, they always describe it as being a high-tech sailing ship. So back in the 1800s, that was, you know, like a man-of-war big galleon with a bunch of guns and really, really expensive, fancy ship. Later on in the 1950s, 60s, there were sightings of this luxury yacht that would hover just above the water. And it's always considered this El Caluche. And the members or the people who pilot this ghost ship, one version of the legend is that it is wizards. Wizards who hang out around Patagonia. And they go on this essentially this party cruise every few years or every solstice. I don't remember exactly what it was. But they go on this cruise and it boosts their magical powers. And they fly around in this advanced ship and make deals with the locals. And when you start dissecting the friendship legends, that's kind of their MO. There are these weird guys, and they're usually seen in a sailing vessel. Their connections to UFOs are interesting, but they're not really that solid. No one's ever seen a member of the group walk out of a UFO. It's always just UFOs seem to hang around this group. And I think that this mythological angle, I think perhaps this friendship legend is just the more modern telling of that story. And that's one of the more interesting angles that I kind of lean towards after doing all the research. But that's why I liked the case. It had it all. It had this kind of mythology, this human explanation, the UFO explanation. It's all up in the air. And I just kind of had to know more about it.
So for people who aren't familiar, because I wasn't, what is the legend of the friendship?
So the friendship is a group in Chile that claim to be extraterrestrials. They're tall, blonde. A lot of the times they wear weird jumpsuits, you know, matching clothes. They all have these angelic names, you know, Gabriel, Michael, all the archangels are
it's
there.
It's definitely a cult.
Ariel, yeah. there's some, you know, perhaps some occult significance there. Some people think perhaps it's a fairy-like group, but they themselves, the UFO speculation mostly comes from themselves, who say that they're aliens. Their planet is, undescript, their original planet. They don't really say. There's this idea that they are, as with all the blonde ones, that they're from the Pleiades. They're the Pleiadians. Mm-hmm. But they haven't quite said that themselves. I've seen some quotes of them coming from the center of the universe, which kind of leans more to that interdimensional a hypothesis, but they seem to have a base, or at least they claim to have a base in Patagonia, in an island in the Chilean archipelagos. And there's several thousand islands in this chain. You can see it on your map. It's where South America kind of breaks up at the end there, and it's beautiful, but it's remote. The only thing that are out there are salmon farms, and they have like maybe one or two people operating them. And then you'll go for another, you know, length of miles, dozens of miles without seeing anything. And then there'll be another one. And an occasional small fishing village, tucked into these islands. So it's a good hiding spot. Of course, the speculation also comes in that there's this possibility that that's where they built a secret Nazi base, because of the remoteness as well. And like the location I investigated before, Villa Bavaria, which wasn't quite a secret Nazi base. It was more of a Nazi death cult, but it was remote too. They had this idea that they had to be away from society.
Go ahead. I have a really just quick question. What is so convincing about the friendship that makes it seem like it could be supernatural that differentiates it from being a cult? I mean, it sounds like exactly what a cult would be. I mean, it sounds like Scientology. It sounds crazy. Are there any stories that, besides just UFO sightings, anything from the friendship that could say, okay, that could convince somebody that has never heard of them that it could be supernatural and not a cult?
Yeah, so that's where I kind of landed as well, is there are some things that don't really line up with that explanation. And the first is there's a few practical things. Of the people who have had pretty credible encounters with them, they all seem to be around the same age. And if we're talking about a remote Nazi death cult like the one I investigated before, the remnants of that one, you would have people, you'd have older people, you'd have younger people, you'd have a population. They also, every encounter seems to report this strange peacefulness that radiates from them. And I found this, and I heard this as told to me in person as well, with people who claimed to have encountered them in Chile. They said, yeah, there's this weird aura about them that makes you kind of calm and relaxed in their presence. And of course, that doesn't really sound like a Nazi. that doesn't really line up as well. There's now towards their connection to the phenomenon. That comes from a few witnesses who communicated with the group, mostly through ham radio. They had a few encounters, but it was a husband and wife duo. And they were talking to the group mostly through ham radio. There was a large, well-documented UFO sighting over the capital, Santiago. And this couple was talking to the friendship when it occurred and asked them, hey, can you make that UFO, go this way, go that way, do a loop-de-loop.
Oh, yeah, that was in your book, right?
They were able to control this UFO. Now, of course, we know nowadays it could have been a remote drone or something like that. Who knows? Just because they were able to control it doesn't mean they were piloting the UFO on board, right? It doesn't necessarily mean they aren't, human. But they do seem to have this connection. Another connection is that their ship, the ship they seem to use, called the Midas II, which people seem to interact with them aboard that vessel most often. UFOs have been sighted around it and interacting with it by other sailors, by the sailors on board who have been hired for these short runs and these temporary smuggling missions. They encounter these UFOs while under the employ of these members. And that's where... again, another strange connection to that legend. They do seem to like to employ local people. They like to pay them with chunks of platinum, rare metals, strange objects, sometimes counterfeit money. It seems to be, they seem to have these connections which could actually go both ways. The counterfeit money kind of loops back to them being a more human group. The idea of counterfeiting alone is a pretty human, construction.
Didn't the counterfeit money, though, it actually ended up, they ran it at the bank and it was good money?
No, even. It was all the same.
It was all the same, but they...
worth like millions.
No, but the money, they ran it through and the money was, they said it was good, even though the serial numbers right. were like all the same. Oh, it was like, yeah, this is good, this is good. And it's like, no, it's all the same serial number. How is that possible? Same, yeah. So that leans more esoteric.
They tried to get it out of circulation and... the person who received the counterfeit money was like, hey, this is fake, and tried to get it out of circulation. And the banks in Chile were telling her that, nope, that money's good. We can't take that. It spends. But again, that might lead to perhaps they're getting some kind of benefit from the Chilean government.
Going deep with it.
In cahoots. Yeah, maybe there's a connection there. Again, and those all kind of lead back to the more human explanations. So again, when looking at this phenomenon, I always, despite my radical investigation techniques, I always tend to be pretty skeptical. And when it comes to analyzing the friendship, I think it's kind of a mixture of the variety of phenomenon that's going on that has kind of evolved into this legend. I think there very well could be a cult down there. But I also think people are having UFO experiences and might be correlating the two. Perhaps the cult is causing these UFO experiences. Perhaps they are doing some kind of, you know, weird rituals or something.
Maybe they're playing with mushrooms and a Ouija board.
Yeah, maybe they're taking a bunch of mushrooms and LSD, and that's what's doing.
Good on them.
But it seems the people in Patagonia are definitely experiencing UFOs at higher rates than most every other part of South America, and not just UFO sightings. The quote from the investigators there was that it's the highest rate of interesting cases, and this means that they're actually interacting. There was a girl who was zapped by a UFO in front of people in daylight, in a similar style to Travis Walton's, Fire in the Sky abduction, where he was abducted in front of seven of his coworkers. So it's things like that that are definitely occurring. I think maybe there is that need to maybe link it to this weird group of people. But again, there's these things, the aura. They know multiple languages. They seem to be able to heal people. One of their most famed traits. A lot of people go looking for them specifically because of that part of the legend. They're looking for miracle cures and things like that. So that's an aspect they share with a lot of the UFO encounters as well. Abductees who are healed and sometimes reverse become extremely ill after interacting with the phenomenon. So it's still up in the air. I wish I could stamp it and say solved. It's definitely something I'm going to keep watching. I was actually able to add a whole section at the end of the book of continuations of the phenomenon I was writing about. Right after I left, there was a mass UFO sighting of these fireballs in Chiloé, which is one of the islands I was staying on. And these, I think, five giant fireballs on different parts of the island, they touched down and they scorched plants. But they weren't meteors because they left no debris. There was no ashes or anything. They just scorched the plants. No one knows what that was. No one knows how to explain it. Cell phone video of all of them. People saw it happen. But it's just one of those things where people are like, oh, well, whatever.
why do people do that? That is fundamentally terrible. That's why we're all like, wait, UFOs? What are those?
It's easier
around.
To shut off your brain.
Shit's happening. There's something wrong with our world right now. I think there are different races of aliens, like whatever is on Patagonia. Like, that might be a nice race. There's the Greys. There's reptilians. There's so many different things that are just visiting us, and we're just like that dumbass planet that's like, derp. Like, there's other stuff. There's not just us.
They're already here. They're interdimensional. They're among us.
I'm not saying I don't have any evidence of this, but from all of the accounts, honestly, I just feel like our whole planet is just retarded with that. There's other stuff going on, and they know. They're like, yeah, these people are stupid. You just land here, go on this remote island. We can just hide out for fucking years. They'll never know.
Well, I actually think that's why
one guy comes
it might
along.
Connect. It might connect to that overall consciousness question, though, because if these crafts are physical and they create their own space-time, let me caveat this. I'm a believer of this idea of biocentrism, which is what it's been called recently, but it's an idea that dates back to the Greek philosophers, and that is that nothing exists without, being observed, by some kind of life form. And if that holds true, then planets like Earth would be kind of oases in a vast and pretty empty universe. So whether or not they're coming from other oases in our same universe or different ones from the multiverse, it would be it's a truck stop. You got to stop off at some kind of point, and you got to go to where there's stuff, where it's actually, where reality's being rendered, for lack of a better word. If, you know, you think of simulation theory, as far as we can see is our little bubble of render. So yeah, I think they would just come here because this is a place, and everywhere else isn't really a place because it's not really.
Well, do you think that the Earth would exist like that because something is on the outside observing us, and that's why we're here, is because we're being observed? That's what it sounds like, kind of.
That gets into like the Hindu, like Vedic philosophies, where we're all.
I love that
just
shit.
Of Rama,
the breath of Rama, whatever. Yeah.
When he breathes in, that's it. That's the end of it all. Maybe, maybe our universe is like the you know, as above, so below. We're an atom in someone else's universe.
I love that idea. Actually, I mean, I love and hate it at the same time, but it makes a lot of sense.
I think of that one all the time. I was just talking about how I think vitamins and medicine are aliens, or I wasn't saying they definitely are. I think we were on mushrooms maybe at the time, but I was like, whoa, what if aliens abducting us is medicine coming into someone's body, or whenever someone dies of a disease, that's like the medicine killing all of us,
ridding it of
the
cancer
on like an atom in their body, and they have cancer. I don't know, it's kind of dumb, but
it's fun. It's always fun stuff to think about.
Cancer. Yeah, it's an interesting philosophy.
There's a lot of people that oppose to that too, though, because they think that humans are actually way more special than we're led to believe. Because if you believe that humans are the cancer on the planet and all that, and we're just a speck in the middle of nowhere, it kind of diminishes like a human's life, which seems pretty egotistical to me too, but it does make sense. Like there is something special about the way humans are that is different than anything else that we've at least observed so far. So there's that. There's two sides of the argument, like always.
Yeah, I think, and I think it is. There's so I actually think of it somewhere in between. I think the humanity is special in the idea that we have. That we are able to have this higher level of consciousness, that we're able to exist in that higher realm. I think consciousness is non-local, so that, you know, when you die, it goes somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, the whatever that energy in your meat salad up there is, it blasts off somewhere. But I also think that that's pretty. I think, you know, most life forms at certain degrees are they exist enough to generate reality, right? If we continue with that whole idea, if a tree falls in a forest and no one's around, does it make a sound? The answer we're always taught is yes, because vibrations. I think the answer is yes, because there's birds and bugs and things around to hear it. If there is no eardrum, if there is nothing to feel that sensation of vibration, then there is no sound. That's where we're sensory organisms. So I think we're special in the fact that we're conscious. We're hopping around in a kind of a cosmic energy form from here and there. But I also think, you know, so do the dogs and the bees.
Yeah, well, so that's not where that special. the Vedic idea of the Brahma and all that, it's kind of a fractal idea of, you know, like a tree, the way that fractal. How else do you explain fractal? But if you think of it like that, and we're on this planet and we're super special living organisms with consciousness, that means that a fractal of that is something a thousand times crazier than we are, and it makes us not that special at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's like we're special in our own space and time, but whatever fractal is 100 times out that way is just even crazier, and we can't even think about that.
No, but I like what you said, too, that people, when they even pose the idea of if a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, like, who's no one? So I like that you said there's bees and birds and other shit that have ears, man. Like, it doesn't have to be a
there's
person.
There's definitely an ant colony that tree
to
smashed.
Report back, it doesn't mean that doesn't make a fucking sound.
Right. Yeah. But I do think that without that being there, without something to feel those sensations, I mean, when it comes down to it, we are just our five senses. Six and seven cents would be space and time. And this is kind of what Einstein was getting into. It's this idea that the closer you're traveling to the speed of light, the shorter objects become for the observer, and the slower time moves for the observer. So there was kind of this knowledge in his research that it only affects those individuals. And that's what I think is occurring when it comes to the UFO phenomenon. I think that, like I said, when you're traveling, wherever they're traveling to, you've got to hop between these rendered realities, Earth being one of them, because it has conscious life. So they've got to hop here to get wherever they're going. And that could be from a different reality or a different solar system or whatever. But that ability to hop like that, they have to be able to alter their own space and time. If you could create your own gravity or travel at the speed of light, then you could, you know, travel in an instant. You do the Star Trek analogy where they fold the paper and you punch through, oh, yeah, right? Warp speed, all that. But you just have to have actual, you know, rendered physical places to go. So that's kind of why I think it takes out the why they're here. I think we're just, you know, for the most part, stopping by. Some of them are picking up people, seems like. Some of them are picking up cows, seems like.
Or cows' assholes, at least.
They're studying. They're just like, whatever, it's an experiment. It's the same as what we do when we're like, oh, cool, what's a bug look like on the inside? Let's dissect a frog in class today. Like, they just...
Maybe an alien getting cow balls.
Such a lower life form to them. I dissected frogs in class. Like, we all got a scalpel out and dissected a dead frog. So that means tons of frogs died. They went out, killed a bunch of frogs, and they're like, we don't care about this life form. We're going to dissect it and learn about it. And I feel like if there's some higher life form, they're going to do the same to us. They don't give a fuck.
No, I mean, if they're coring out cows' assholes and taking their balls off, maybe it's like us carrying around fucking rabbit's feet. I mean, how long has that been going on? That's pretty fucking weird,
well,
too.
I've had cow tongue tacos, and it's pretty good. So
lengua. Yeah, they might just be eating cow nuts. Who knows? Benjamin, good, you're super quiet. Can you hear me?
I think he's talking to Lonnie.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry for the distraction. That's why I turn off my mic.
This is why you go into the laundry room to do this.
Yeah, this is what happens when you no longer have the counterpart parent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Well, no, because I was listening, and a lot of what you guys are talking about, just to cap everything that I've heard since we came back from the break, a lot of that type of stuff is what I would consider, like, a really good novel. just coming from my point of view and what I believe is, like, it's super interesting. I enjoy hearing about it. I enjoy learning about it. But at the end of the day, I look at it and I go, well, that's a good thought. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't really know what I think about it, just because I'm not very learned on the subject, first of all.
Do you think we're alone in the universe?
It's not... What's that?
Do you think we're alone in the universe?
I don't know. Honest to God, I
no one
I,
does.
I would put, yeah, I...
That's why we talk about this.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't tell you whether we are or not. I think that if and when we get solid evidence, contact, things like that, it would absolutely 100% not blow me away. I would be like, oh, that's some crazy shit.
That's what sci-fi is for, pre-programming.
2020 happened last year, too. You know what I mean? Like, to me, the idea of us learning about any of this, to me, is just kind of, okay. I mean, we've been kind of on that track for a long time. The other part of me thinks about, you know, Joe, you've made a lot of jokes about it before. You know, one of the posts that you made on Instagram was post of the guy making the dumb face, and it was like 1900s, letting blood will help you cure disease, and then it kind of goes through like a list of things. Wearing a mask, well, you know,
yeah.
And my first thought was, I was like, yeah, see, that's one of the things that I keep coming back to is all of these questions, and Chaz brought up all the way back to, you know, ancient Greek philosophers. charting stars, doing all of this type of stuff. It's like, these have all been questions that people have been asking for a long time. We're at an age now where we actually have supportive technology and advancements that actually aid us in finding out more questions to the human body, the human mind, anything outside of that, the idea of what consciousness is. I mean, back in the day, people called it your soul. It was something that, you know, you couldn't put a finger on that makes that person you. And Chaz brought up, you know, when you die, you know, it goes somewhere. So all of these different levels of things that are still widely talked about, they're widely accepted more and more as fact instead of in 1980s, you know, sci-fi movie where everything is overly dramaticized and grotesque.
Spaceballs.
And Star Troopers. And like all of these different ideas that you have, I think that the more that becomes common knowledge, the more that people start to accept it as, yeah, I mean, there's too much evidence that we are alone. It 100% would not at all surprise me. But at the same time, this is why we're all still talking about it on a hypothesis level.
Well,
this
what you were saying, though, about
go out and research.
Being in 2020 and having all this information is, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah. There's also just as much, if not more, misinformation, disinformation,
sure.
Purposeful misleading of the populace. There's a lot of fucking that, too. So there might be way more information, but it's way harder to sort through now. You're trying to, like,
well,
pick things out and be like, does this make sense? No, this doesn't make sense with that. But
that's why I, whenever I think of the idea, especially in the last, shit, I would even say 30 years, much less 50 to 100, is this idea of kind of like this big bubble that we went through. Everybody, you know, 50 years ago, they stayed in their lane. You know, even some of, you know, our parents and people like that, but they don't accept any of this kind of information as anything that's plausible. And I think part of us went through this thing where our technology and our informational age got so big that everybody's minds kind of popped, and inadvertently, whether you like it or not, you have been red-pilled if you live in today's day and age because of all of the information that has now come about. But that end of that bubble is that everybody came back when they started realizing that disinformation and misinformation were also just as widely spread, that you never can really, you kind of just have to look at everything and go, where am I going to stand on this? Am I going to, because you got to take the bad with the good. You got to eat the meat and spit out the bones. And so my thing is, I'm like, I kind of am back down now into just kind of staying back in my own lane because I go, I don't know how much of this is disinformation and how much of it is true. So I wouldn't really honestly be surprised either way.
Now, I'm completely right there with you. That's why we're all down the middle and why we all get along. Chaz, what were you going to say?
I just appreciate that that perspective, and I think it gets into the theory level. It does get a little, you know, and I think it is important to go back to the physical. And that's where it really hit for me, because I was you know doing some Ghostbuster stuff when I was younger. That's kind of how I got my entry. But I started really being intrigued by the UFO phenomenon because of all of the physical aspects involved, especially the alien implants. I think it's I hope I quote it right, Roger Lear, the podiatrist who took out these implants.
Yeah,
they're weird. I mean, he's taking out these metal corkscrew things that look like, they just look bizarre. These little pill-sized grains of rice that are like these clear technological little bits in there. And there's all these things, and, you know, these people are coming to him and saying, hey, I had an alien abduction and they put something inside of me. And he, being a doctor, said, okay, well, let's look. let's check this out. Let's see if there's something inside you. And he's found repeatedly all of these pieces. And I find it very interesting because, of course, you know, the skeptics like to use Occam's razor or whatever.
Abraham's laser.
Abraham's laser.
Ben, you missed out on that one, but that was a Ryan joke from the last podcast we did with Dangerous World. He's like, Brandon, what do you have this fucking Abraham's laser thing or whatever? And Brandon's like, Occam's razor. That's great.
The joke that they made on Big Bang Theory. Go ahead, Chaz. I'll let you finish what you were saying.
So it comes down to are these people making up a story, but not only just making up a story, concocting these rare little devices out of rare earth minerals, minerals that aren't that common on Earth, and then injecting themselves in a surgical fashion, or are they telling the truth?
That's a lot more of the line that I take too. Is that a lot of people, they say I'm cynical, and that's more true than not, for sure. But part of what I look at is I go, in order for me to open up my brain to it, other than, like I said, it being a good story, I have to have something that moves past the hypothesis and theory point of view. I have to be able to see something, or at least be provided physical evidence of it. See, things like what you just brought up, that would 100% make me go, okay, here's some valid evidence for me that shit like this is happening. That would provide it. I watched the whole documentary on, I think they made it in 2005, on the Phoenix Lights, and how like thousands of people called, and they were talking about the triangular form of the spacecraft. They were talking about it having six lights instead of the three that you were talking about. The kind of light was like an illuminated ball of gas. There was no, I guess you could say diode or anything like that. And that was actually a point of light in it. It was just glowing. There's all these things, and they all lined up so hardcore that I went, you can't collectively get thousands of people with a scripted cause to not fuck up enough that people would go, this is bullshit. And they had so many people that all said the same exact thing, all within a matter of a few hours, that people that I looked at it and I went, this got to be true, whether or not it's the military, which honestly, I don't think that most of the military bases have anything even close to what we're talking about. I think that if they did, there would be a select few. And I see our government being like, yeah, let them think it's the military. That's one more distraction. Because we have no idea what.
But
the
there's
fuck
the other
is.
Side of that too, and all, right, exactly. Also going, yeah, let them think it's aliens. Fucking whatever. That's our shit. That's why we have these talks. I like what you said earlier though about hearing something like this and thinking, oh, it's just an interesting story. But when there's so many of those interesting stories that overlap over, years and decades, you'd be stupider to not look into it a little bit, maybe just even a little bit.
Well, for instance,
like just to write it all off as poppycock is ridiculous.
One of the guys that supported the Phoenix Lights when he was in Phoenix and this happened, he was a 40-year ex-pilot, jet fighter pilot for the Navy, and then afterwards was a commercial pilot. And he said, he goes, I've been around these kind of aircrafts. I've had classified clearances. I've done this, that, and the other. He goes, I have never seen anything like this. He goes, and I figured with the way, with my, I guess you could say his resume, like I would be able to pull some weight with supporting these claims. And when I realized that I was one of several thousand people who exactly identify the same things that they thought, I thought, for sure, this is going to be looked into. And he's like, of course it wasn't. It was all passed off as hearsay. But when I look at testimonies like that, I go, okay, so then there's obviously something to this. I just have I have a very, very, very big grain of salt whenever I hear stories like this, for me to actually go, okay, there's something there. There has to be something there. And of course, you can take collective, patterns. And I know, Joe, that you've talked about, I forget what the podcast was that you were listening to for several years there.
It's probably Mysterious Universe. That's who featured. Probably Mysterious Universe. They featured his book on their. Yeah. We talked about that at the beginning. But that's what I mean, is that after so many stories and so many reports, and all there's there's plenty of video evidence too. Most of it's shitty because people have shitty cameras. Have you ever tried to take a picture of the moon with your phone? It looks like shit. Try getting a UFO going 1,000 miles an hour across the sky. Of course, it's going to be shitty. But there's plenty of other... I heard something on another show the other day. They're like, what is the most definitive defense in a murder case? An eyewitness testimony. And for some reason, when eyewitnesses see UFOs, they're like, nonsense. You didn't. It was a weather balloon. It was swamp gas.
That's when eyewitnesses become no longer credible. Yeah. When it's something that they don't want to hear.
So that was on MU also. They said, how many eyewitnesses do you need for a murder? And they were like, one. And that one person's testimony is like basically all you need. But when it's one person seeing a UFO, they're like, fuck you. You're dumb.
Well, yeah. And in Texas, if they have two or three eyewitnesses, they send retards to the chair. So, I mean, it doesn't take much for people to make an assumption. And of course, if our government says it is what it is, a lot of people believe it. I will say this, though, as anybody who is in any kind of specialized field, I do appreciate you going out and actually, like Joe said at the beginning, actually physically being there, going through the research rather than just reading the research to, you know, base what you've done off of, because that to me is the first step towards any kind of validity. Is if I can talk to somebody who's actually been there and they've done it and they've experienced it, that to me holds a lot more weight than just while reading a novel. You know,
basically,
what I mean?
We respect you for not doing what we do.
I respect you for not being a complete piece of shit. How about that?
Hey.
I think it's something we've lost a little bit in the paranormal community. I'm so tired of seeing the same, you know, rehashed Ghost Adventures episode. Everyone goes to the same like five sites in the U.S. And calls it, you know, research. And to actually, you know, be able to go and work on a case, be there working on it for, you know, 2 months, almost 3 months, just focused on that project. It's definitely, it was definitely worth it. It definitely is something I hope more researchers continue to work cases more aggressively like that. I don't really believe in anything gets accomplished by this kind of fly-by-night tourism style, one-night, overnight investigation, talking to your EVP voice recorder. I think there needs to be a more research-focused, but also, you know, get out and try experiments. You know, they don't necessarily have to be LSD experiments, but there's been some really fascinating work being done with Ganzfeld experiments, with the sensory deprivation and those kinds of things into investigations, and all that stuff. That stuff's, you know, how we're going to get closer. To Ben's point before, the book is a lot of good stories. I do try to make it entertaining. It's a lot of good stories. I keep my analysis, you know, kind for the most part, not all the time. You know, it's definitely definitely entertaining. And that's why a lot of these fields get looked into. But we are left with kind of scraps that I think we... you know, we can theorize and we can kind of put together. I think when it comes to just the nature of UFOs, I think it's very similar to the nature of artificial intelligence. It's a thing where we're kind of there. Like we get the idea of a computer and how it kind of works like a brain, right? And we get the idea of a plane and how it kind of works like a UFO. That's kind of where we're at. We understand the ideas of, you know, a vehicle, but we're missing some kind of main component. And whether that has to do with only what the propulsion system is, maybe that's what it is. But I think that for now, what we can take is we can take these sightings and these cases, you know, some more credible than others. Of course, frauds are out there. And you got to be on your toes and looking for that. You know, always check off your human explanations. But you are left with these stories and these evidence that I think is people are experiencing a lot of times. So many times when I'm hearing these experiences, whether it's in person or through research, I say to myself, that person's on a drug trip. They're tripping balls.
And you would know.
Maybe they don't know it, right? They just don't know how to explain it because they've never done it before. And it seems that these experiences correlate with these psychedelic experiences. Missing time seems to be one of the main factors. And I've had drug trips where I've lost a couple hours. And I've had ones where, you know, even anyone just, you know, who's had a night where they've closed their eyes and opened their eyes and it was morning, right? That's a sensation, that kind of thing happens when there's chemical alterations in the brain. And that's something that we see in many UFO cases. You have the high strangeness. Jacques Vallée cited an example where he found a stack of pancakes in the location of a UFO landing.
Oh, yeah.
He hiked it up to this location, miles into the woods, many miles from any diners or anything, to look at this UFO landing site, and there was a stack of freshly cooked pancakes.
Weren't they missing salt or something? There was some weird thing about that where they were missing salt or like baking soda or something.
They were gross. He tried one. I can't remember exactly what it was. But, you know, anyone who's taken a bunch of drugs and frolicked through the woods, you tend to find weird shit like that. And again, it's those little lines where when you're tripping, you're convinced it's a sign from the universe. And, you know, according to some of this research, you know, maybe it is. Maybe it has something to do with, you know, seeing these creatures. And it kind of extends to Bigfoot sightings and all paranormal sightings, poltergeist sightings as well. I think it's main effect is on consciousness, and then everything else that occurs is kind of a side effect of what's happening with your consciousness. That's why you can have group abductions where people see different things, because you can have a group trip where you see different things. And again, this is even more theorizing, so stay with me, Ben. I think that perhaps whatever kind of faster than light travel device, if these are, you know, physical entities at the end of the day, whatever it does is having that space time altering effect on the observer. And we as human beings just haven't realized that that's what it looks like. It looks like a drug trip. So these people who are describing these crazy, you know, experiences while they're on board, and these strange, you know, subdued effects is because I think they're under the influence of something. That, or maybe it's just like a really crazy MK Ultra project. If you want to take it from the human.
Oh shit, that's another episode, buddy. We got to do that one.
It could just be that. Who knows? That's why this is so fun, though, because you can spend all day thinking about it,
just connecting dots that aren't there, as they say.
It just keeps going and going.
Did you want to close out with anything? I know it's super late there, dude. I'm sorry.
No worries. If you want to add any more dots to your map, pick up my book, Paranormal Expeditions, Hunt for the Friendship. It's a story of UFOs, Nazis, psychedelics, and an expedition to the edge of the world.
Available on Amazon, right?
On Amazon, yep. Find it on Amazon, guys, ebook and paperback. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Hey, Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.